Tonight we talk about Enochian vision magic with Lon Milo Duquette. And we might even be able to teach you how to use it in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. Well, here he is. He's back. Lon Milo Duquette, an American writer, lecturer, best known as an author on subjects of magic and the occult. And here he is now with his latest work, Enochian Vision Magic. Hey, Lon, how are you? Welcome back.
I'm doing fine. Hi, George. It's always a pleasure.
Oh, me too. Good job on this. I like this.
Thank you.
Different. What got you into this? Because we're going to talk also about a Dr. John Dee and Edward Kelly as well. We're going way, way back. But tell me about the overview here.
The overview is that there's a variety of Western magic that was developed back in the 1500s by the John Dee character that you mentioned. And it's a form of vision magic. It's a technique where you literally sort of induce an altered state of consciousness in which you have visions.
In the old days, the ancient days, as I like to call them, even though they weren't that far ago, magicians served kings and queens, did they not?
They did. They were as much a part of the court scene as prime ministers, and they were Henry Kissingers of the day.
Yeah, except Kissinger didn't walk around with curled up slippers.
Yeah.
Tell me about Dr. John Dee. Why is he so important?
Well, John Dee, first of all, was the most famous mathematician and scientist in the late 1500s. This was in England during the reign of Queen Elizabeth I. And Dee was a genius. As a young man, he wrote books on mathematics that just blew everything else out of the water. And it earned him literally rock star status throughout Europe. He was an inventor and a navigator. He created, the advanced nautical instruments and the maps and the charts that made Elizabeth's navy the greatest navy in the world. He even invented the word Britannia. And this guy had the largest library in England, and it might have been the largest library in the world. And he was everything. He was an astronomer, a physician, an engineer, a philosopher, and a cryptographer, which later became important to him. But he was arguably the smartest guy in the world.
Okay, if he was so sharp, why, Lon, would he dabble with magic?
Yeah, it sounds like a good question.
It better be.
and this may sound funny to us here in the 21st century, but Dee involved himself in magic because he was a brilliant man. As the smartest guy in the world, people came to him for answers.
I'm having some crackling on your old phone, by the way, Lon.
Is that me?
Are you on a cordless, or do you have a cord there?
I've got a cord here.
Okay, maybe that's it. You might the old cord. Jiggle it for a second. I want to hear this. Yeah, that may be. So we might have to call your backup in a second.
Okay.
If we do. So keep going, and then my engineer, if he gives me that look, I will call you right
now.
All
right, because I hear it too.
Yeah, you see that? Okay.
Yeah.
Matter of fact, why don't we have Tom, while I'm talking to you, call your backup phone. You got that next to you?
I sure do.
And then what we might do is just use that until we get to the bottom of the half here, and we'll try to figure out what we're doing here.
Sounds good.
So as soon as you hear
it, we're having magic disturbance.
You could be. So when you hear it ring, just pick up on that phone and we'll switch over.
Okay.
And the magic. Anyways, back to Dr. John Dee. So brilliant guy.
Where does the smartest guy in the world go when he still has questions? And back in the 16th century, the answer was God or the angel. Hello.
Okay, there he is. He's picking it up. Okay. And Tommy will put him on hold, and I will grab it and let you, Danny, punch it up the way you want to do it. He's on line one, and there he goes, Lon, with the magic of radio. There you are again, Lon.
I'm impressed.
Look at that. What a difference.
I'm impressed.
Magic it is. Now I'm going to disconnect the other line, okay?
Okay, and I'm hanging up.
All right, you're gone on that one. Okay, now we're back, and it sounds good, and then we'll figure out what to do in about 10 minutes or so.
Okay.
Okay, good.
Well, my point is, you know, when you're the smartest guy in the world and everybody comes to you for answers, where the heck do you go, you know, when you have questions? And that was just Dee's predicament. And back then, it wasn't unscientific to attempt to access the mind of God and make contact with God's messengers, the angels, just like they did in the Bible. And so, you know, and it's clear that Dee and his partner both passionately believed in the Bible as a historical document.
Well, was he like a Merlin?
He was a Merlin. He was Elizabeth. He turned out to be Elizabeth Merlin, for sure. And
so she felt comfortable with him.
She felt very comfortable. As a matter of fact, he believed in her before she even became queen. And she had made his acquaintance. And, there's a lot of very, very interesting historical intrigue. Dee was thrown into the tower for attempting to bewitch, you know, Queen Mary before Elizabeth came on, and he was scheduled to have his head lopped off.
Oh no!
but Dee drew up everybody's astrological charts, and so he knew whose head was going to drop before his was, and so he just relaxed in the tower and. I don't know what he did, but he wasn't worried.
Well, he really had a belief then in his astrology, because let me tell you, I'm not so sure I would have been that confident in that at that time.
No, I don't think Gene Dixon would have either. So Dee became her confidant and her advisor.
Why did she like him? What did he do to get her attention?
Well, first of all, he was one of the most famous people in the world. He was England's brightest scholar, England's brightest mathematician.
All right, well-respected.
Well-respected. And the guy was a complete talent. And not only that, but he had the ideas that allowed Elizabeth to dream the big dream of the British Empire.
Right, now, did he didn't cast spells on anybody or do anything like that, or did he?
Well, not exactly spells upon people, but he is credited with raising the storm that sank the Spanish Armada.
Now, tell me that story.
It's a very interesting story. In around 1588... Spain was getting ready to invade England, and Spain had this incredible armada of ships that was just the biggest in the world. And it was a foregone conclusion that Spain was going to invade England, and so Elizabeth brought all of her admirals and her advisors, and they were preparing for this duel to the death, and it really seemed bad for England. And Dee told her that a storm was going to come up suddenly and sink the Spanish Armada, and that she should keep most of her ships at bay. And this was advice that no one else was giving her, okay? But she trusted Dee, and she kept most of her ships at bay. Sure enough, a storm, huge storm, rose up and scattered and sank the Spanish Armada. Now, so famous was Dee because of this event. I mean, he was credited, in the popular imagination, as the guy
who did it.
Who did it? And just a few years later, Shakespeare modeled his character Prospero from the play The Tempest. You know,
after him.
Yeah, after John Dee. He was that famous.
Did he luck out, Lon?
Well, you know, you never know. And he didn't go around you know, bragging that he did that. But he did other magical things of a more secret and a more private nature that we're only beginning to realize what he was doing. You know, he was Elizabeth's spy because he was always on these lecture tours.
Oh, so I guess there was a faction there then that hated him, right?
There probably was a faction that hated him. You know, he appears as a character in this new movie, Elizabeth the Golden Age.
No, I did not know that.
Yes, there's at least two scenes where
He plays the part of John Dee?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Almost said John Dean. Nixon would have not liked that.
Well, anyway, he wanted to spy for Elizabeth, and he did spy for Elizabeth. Every time he would go overseas for one of his lecture tours, and he had access to the courts of Europe, and he would write these coded messages back to Elizabeth, and Elizabeth called him the Queen's Eyes. And because he was the Queen's Eyes, he had a little code signature that he used at the end of all of his secret dispatches so that she knew it was from him. And it was like two circles for the two eyes and then sort of a elongated seven over it. So it looked like a hand shielding two eyes.
Mm-hmm.
Looks sort of like opera glasses on a stick, you know?
I want everyone to be able to attempt this because it's not evil stuff, right?
No, certainly not. Unless your idea of evil is really misdirected.
Well, that's always a possibility. You know, with good and with good and bad, good things can be misdirected for the wrong purposes.
Just like electricity, yeah.
Well, that's a good point.
So. Well, but he was her 007. He signed off as 007. He was the original secret agent 007.
Was he the character that Ian Fleming based his books on?
Well, he didn't.
Upgraded, basically?
Yes. He was famous as and he's revered as England's first archetypal secret agent. And there's even an exhibit. A John Dee exhibit at the International Spy Museum in Washington, D.C.
His power, though, didn't just come naturally. Didn't he get some angelic help?
Yes, he did. And he started to get this angelic help in an attempt to remote view. You know, he was tired of going back and forth to the continent to spy. He just wanted to sit back and relax at his home in Mortlake and remote view, eavesdrop on the courts and all of the characters.
Without leaving, physically.
Without leaving, yeah. And so he set to work to develop a system where he could contact angels and ask them questions. And get answers and eavesdrop and spy for Elizabeth magically.
And are you saying he was successful in doing this, contacting angels?
I believe he was, and he spent the better part of 3 years with his magical partner almost daily in contact with some form of intelligences that identified themselves as the same angels that communicated to the biblical patriarchs, such as Enoch.
Really? All right.
Yeah.
Hence the Enochian vision magic.
There you go. Yes.
Hmm.
And in doing so, almost inadvertently, the angels not only, gave him answers concerning, you know, the politics and the intrigues of 16th century, European warfare and such. In doing so, they also revealed fundamental secrets of creation, fundamental information concerning the nature of human consciousness that has been the goal of seekers and philosophers
since
the beginning of time.
Absolutely. Now, prior to this kind of intervention, was he aware of this? Was he dabbling in it? Or Did this change him?
He was dabbling in it. First of all, for the purposes of spying.
So he was using this for, I guess if you were English, you'd say it was for the better. But if you weren't, you'd say he was using it for some evil type purposes.
Well, I guess if you were,
if you were a Spaniard,
you thought this was pretty darn evil, you know. But he did it in the classic love of queen and country. And he stayed Elizabeth's counselor right up until the time she died. And
what happened after that? Once she was gone, was he still okay?
Well, he was okay. He got a position as the chancellor of Manchester College in Manchester, which is sort of out in the boondocks.
Retired him out there?
Yeah, they sort of put him out. And there was a brouhaha about his magical activities that got him almost in trouble with King James, you know, who followed Elizabeth. And he got himself in danger, getting burned at the stake a couple times because he was indiscreet about defending his magical activities.
Now, we're going to really get into this, too, when we come back in a moment, because I want to talk about black magic.
Okay.
And also, what was the Aleister Crowley tie-in with the work of Dr. John Dee?
Well, John Dee kept such wonderful notes that in the late 1800s, the Magicians of the Golden Dawn, the magical society, used part of the Dee material to create two distinct magical visionary systems. And Crowley used those systems and innovated and developed them as they've never been developed before. As a matter of fact, Crowley's entire initiatory, you know, personal initiatory career was more or less based on part of this Enochian vision magic.
And you say we can all learn this?
Yes, if you're inclined to, we certainly can.
We're all going to be doing it by the end of the show, Lon. You're going to teach us.
If you want, I sure will, yeah.
No harm will come, right?
Well, I can't.
You can't endorse that, huh?
Right.
Guarantee it.
You know, magic's an art form, okay? It's a spiritual art form, and not all of us are artists.
Yes. Well, that's a good point. Look, also, though, as we talk about the angelic realm and how it affects magic, we'd be remiss if we didn't talk about the demonic end of it, too, because that is very real and that is there, and that has an effect on it, too, doesn't it?
Well, yes, but Dee and Kelly, it really can't be said that they had a great many what we would consider demonic experiences. They had encounters with angels that they later found out were lying to them. But you know, they never had their heads turned around, or they never threw up, or any of the nasty things that you usually think of.
Angels that lie to them?
Well, yeah.
Were they the fallen angels?
Well, they might be considered that because they would talk to, a set of angels one day, and a few days later, Raphael or an archangel would appear to them and say, "Well, you guys really were taken in the other day by these lying
angels, the demons."
Yeah.
We'll be back with more with Lon Milo Duquette. Magic on Coast to Coast AM. And we're talking magic with Lon Milo Duquette. I love that name, by the way, Lon Milo Duquette. We'll be back with him in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. We're back with Lon Milo Duquette. Lon, you do a lot of research into this book, The Enochian Vision Magic, which you also called A Practical Guide to Magic and How It Was Practiced. Did other magicians after John Dee practice this?
Yes, a handful of them did. Just like a generation after after D, a man named Dr. Rudd developed sort of kind of a system based on Enochian magic. But it really lay dormant for about 300 years until the magicians of the Golden Dawn dug it up and saw how at least some of it could fit into their structure and their idea of magic.
How did they find it? How did they resurrect it?
Well, it was always known to be there. The great British antiquarian Elias Ashmole was just fascinated with Dee's material and set up a whole museum for Dee's magical implements and his diaries, such at Oxford. And so the myth of John Dee, carried through to people who were interested in that esoteric end of things. But when it finally got to the Golden Dawn people in the late 1800s, they only used a tiny portion of Dee's material. As a matter of fact, they used only the last 90 days of the magical operations that Dee and Kelly performed for 3 years. And so that last 90 days worth of stuff is what modern magicians have called Enochian magic. But what makes my book unique is that there was two other distinct magical systems and lots of very interesting things that happened to Dee and Kelly before that last material was received. And it's clear to me that in those 2.5 years prior to that last creme de la creme of information, that Dee and Kelly were actually being attuned, prepared, kind of step by step, to receive that last juicy magical system that the Golden Dawn used. And so my idea is that Enochian magic as practiced by the Golden Dawn and Aleister Crowley works fine. It works just fine right out of the box. But how much better does it work if the individual magician nowadays could try to prepare themselves, go through the same kind of experiences that step-by-step raised the consciousness of Dee and Kelly. In other words, how much better would Enochian magic work if you were prepared and attuned like Dee and Kelly were? And that was the idea that I seized upon about 3 years ago as a result of a series of classes I gave here at the house.
Do you practice this?
Yes, I do. And as a matter of fact, I teach it at my weekly magic class here in Costa Mesa. And when I lecture on it, I actually have people experience it themselves. And you can just dive right in and do it.
All right, give me an example, first of all, on how you know you're doing it. I mean, give me an example on just what the approach is, first of all.
Well, the approach, there's an assortment, there's an array of magical equipment that, in a sense, represents a miniature of the universe. Okay.
All right.
And through the use of, and get this, an angelic language, Dee and Kelly were given an angelic language. It's a real language with grammar and syntax, and it's a language that has a series of calls in this angelic tongue. And after you prepare yourself, you recite certain calls that are designed to open up certain heavens, or the way I look at it, certain levels of consciousness that vibrate okay, to this angelic tongue. What we do is after we prepare ourselves and discuss, you know, the theory behind it, I will recite one of these calls in the angelic language, and I'll do one for you if you'd like.
Okay. Yeah. Well, what's going to happen to us? Anything?
I think you'll be okay.
All right. Good.
Okay. But in the proper setting, the calls will put the listener into an altered state of consciousness, but a very specific altered state of consciousness.
Now, well, let me ask you, someone's driving, listening to this. Anything going to happen there? I mean, is there some kind of a disclaimer or something we need to get out?
Well, I don't think anything, nothing bad has ever happened with somebody driving that I've done this on the radio before.
Okay. All right. So, okay. Just protecting my audience, Lon. They come first.
I understand, and I totally appreciate that, but I think we're safe here.
Right.
As a matter of fact, in all the years that I've done Nokian magic, I've found it to be the cleanest and the safest technique of magic that's known to me. I haven't, knocking on wood here, I haven't encountered any ill effects of Enochian magic whatsoever.
Okay. All right. Do your magic, Juan.
Well, you want me to read the call, you mean?
Yeah, do it.
Oh, okay. Well, this is a call that opens up the very, very lowest of the 30 Enochian heavens, or aethers.
All right. Now, the lowest of the 30 Enochian heavens means what?
Right.
What does that mean?
That means the Kabbalists have a way of looking at the universe and levels of consciousness as if there were 10 major levels.
Like heaven and hell could be on a level?
Well, yeah, hell would be out of the picture and below, okay?
Okay.
And so our everyday level of consciousness that we have, that we go about our business in our waking consciousness, would represent the ground floor of consciousness.
Okay.
And then the Enochian angels like to divide the entire stratum of consciousness. At the very highest would be the environment of the consciousness of pure deity, and the very lowest one would be a level of consciousness that we drift in and out of naturally every day, kind of thing. So this one would open up the lowest of those heavens, and
right.
It's called Kex.
Spell it.
P-E-X.
P-E-X, all right.
Right. And here's how the call would go in the Enochian tongue.
All right.
Osanufarasaji. Oh, excuse me. I'll read you the 19th call instead. Oh, what forces we could have unleashed, Art. Okay, hang on. Tex. Madrias dies prof tex. Kis mi kaos, senir kaos go od fifis baldis rasiada. Nonka gohulim, nikma adoyan mad. Yaud bliorb sova uan kis lusiftias peripsal. Dias abresa non snid taib ka usgi, o tilbad se dom plaz, tu at non sgi mi ka zoma. Raz taf plom, mar bjarvi, I tu iko, o tul zult yad af kohol. Ka usga tabi urd se nir, o Christios, il poil tiobl, pas dir tilb no an pa idors ba, do dremni zilna. Il zep tilb, Pangi peripsax. Ut aquelst buapis, elne bemucho simp. Ut Christios segel toton mirque ti oblelel, ton pem dilsmo aspian. Ut Christios agel toton baraka simp. Kurzis dod palud fifisels menad, ut fartst bams omawas, kunis bra uavavax tonug. Olska tibel noazmi tabjis litit mong, unciom tibelors. Baglei, muaul kodzis.
Let me stop you there, Lon. I have got the eeriest feeling when you were doing that. Why would that happen to me?
Well, because...
I mean, eerie, like hair standing up on one's arm.
It is an angelic tongue.
What were you saying, basically?
This was the call. It was sort of like a description of a creation, and how the earth was created. What I read so far was. Would you like to hear the translation of what I read so far?
Yeah, a little bit before we get out of here.
Okay. O you heavens, which dwell in the 30th aether, that are mighty in the parts of the earth and execute the judgment of the highest. To you it is said, behold the face of your God, the beginning of comfort, whose eyes are the brightness of the heavens, which provided you for the government of the earth in her unspeakable variety, furnishing you with the power of understanding to dispose all things according to the providence of him that sitteth on the holy throne, and rose up in the beginning, saying, the earth, let her be governed by her parts, and let there be division in her, that the glory of her may always be drunken and vexed in itself.
So when you say this, what is supposed to happen?
It's supposed to get the attention of the angels of that particular aether, that particular heaven.
That level.
Yes. And it's, I sort of look at it like even if you mispronounce the words, and it's almost like their school song, you know.
My school song was never like that.
if you're going down the street and you hear your old school song coming out of a house or out of a bar or something, you'd stop and say, "Hey, that's my school song. I'm going to show up and see what's going on." In other words, it gets you vibrating to that same celestial vibration.
It sounded like something that a vampire would recite, honestly.
Well, there's nothing I can say to that, George, except it's not a vampire-y kind of thing, and maybe I just said it too spooky.
Maybe. Now, why would anyone practice this? What's the benefit here?
Well, like that's the best question of all, because not everyone would be attracted to something like this as a spiritual art form. The reason to do something like this, and truly the only reason to do something like this, would be if you thought somewhere along the line that this was going to bring you into better balance with yourself and the universe, if it would contribute any way to your well-being, advancing toward enlightenment. If something like this, because a vision that you receive after you do Enochian vision magic, is highly, highly personal.
Does it give you psychic abilities or anything like that?
It could have that as a byproduct. But what it should be doing, and what you're doing it for, is to get a better insight on your own life, a better insight on yourself. You receive visions. You close your eyes after you know 10 minutes of chanting this and reciting these calls, and you do have visions that are unique to you and your own vocabulary of images and concepts. So when I do this with a group of people, We sit quietly for maybe 10 minutes after we do the calls, and people just sit quietly and observe what goes on in their minds.
Have you ever, once you've recited things like this, Have you ever seen something happen or anything like that?
Well, we've done many experiments, and because some of these governors of these aethers also represent geographic parts of the Earth. And a very curious series of visions that we did as a series of classes was to pinpoint certain of these angelic governors and link them to their specific parts of the Earth. And this is a number of years back, and one of the governors controlled what is now the geographic location of Afghanistan. And one of our class members started giggling throughout the session. What? We had to stop and say, why are you giggling?
Yeah, what was so funny about that?
What's so funny about Afghanistan? And she said that she had the image of three or four of the giant Stay Puft Marshmallow men, you know, from Ghostbusters, this colossal...
Yeah.
Colossal marshmallow man, and we all giggled, and she said, I had this vision of three or four of these colossal marshmallow men being blown up. And
so she lost it.
It was just 2 days later that the Taliban blew up the big Buddhas in Afghanistan.
Okay.
And
she just couldn't put it together.
Yes. And see, that's how she had her own vocabulary of images.
Isn't that the case, though, along with a lot of people? They have these hunches. They have these incredible intuitive abilities, but they don't act on it, or they can't see it until after the fact. And then they go, oh, my gosh, yes, I had that dream, or I knew I shouldn't have done that. But it's
right.
Too late then.
But it's too late then. So part of the job of a magician is to write down in as much detail as possible the results of the scrying session or the vision session. And then the next week, when we go a little bit higher, write down that information. And then constantly review your diary, because your diary, in a sense, is giving you a step-by-step trip in your own consciousness-raising program. And so the idea is, well, I really don't have to understand exactly why I'm seeing this at the moment. I'm just observing like a scientist, and I'm writing down what I've observed. And then later on in the process, I keep reviewing what's happening, and it paints a picture. It paints a often remarkably clear picture of your own initiatory growth, your own character building, inward character building experience.
Well, with the ability to do magic, Lon, why can't people, let's say, pick great stocks or win the lottery? We'll talk a little bit about that when we come back. Final hour, we'll let you chat about your own magical experiences. I'll be back in a moment with Lon Milo Duquette on Coast to Coast AM.